Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I am Will.
This is a podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from mitigating mayhem to masterful marksmen. And today we're talking about Merfolk and Moreau.
So it's Fish Person Day again, Brian.
We're
seem
going
to be having one of these a month.
Back under.
We're going back
under the seas. There's under a lot the of sea. Weird shit down there.
There is.
Just like the real world.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. So merfolk, or mermaids and mermen, are one of D&D's many marine-dwelling amphibious humanoids. As we know, there's a lot of those. But while many of the fish peoples we have talked about recently, such as the Sahuagin or the Kuatoa, are generally speaking evil societies, merfolk tend to err on the side of neutrality.
Yeah, I think we've only talked about the evil underwater stuff
so
far.
No, we've talked about Tritons.
Oh, yeah. That was
and
dope.
We've touched on sea elves,
which I'm excited to get to.
We will. Trying to think, are there any other good fish? No, we've talked about all the nasty bad ones.
There's just that one good kraken that kind of gets bullied by all the other krakens.
Right.
Yeah.
So also, unlike many of the aquatic peoples we have spoken of on the show before, merfolk are more akin to tribalistic hunter-gatherers rather than having highly structured societies with cities and armies.
I see. The centaurs of the sea.
The centaurs of the sea. Though some merfolk, actually that's a really good analogy because they are kind of centaurish. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Though some merfolk kingdoms are said to exist. Though they rarely choose to interact with the peoples of the surface world, merfolk are famed for being romanticized by sailors as beautiful seductresses, playful tricksters, and at time life-saving allies.
So if you heard a fucking crazy pirate story back at the bar, it was a siren or a merfolk?
Yeah, indeed.
Okay.
And though these things are not necessarily untrue, they are very embellished versions of that truth, and most merfolk go their entire lives without ever interacting with or even thinking about interacting with land dwellers. Merfolk are, of course, based off their in-real-life mythological counterpart of the same name.
Cool.
So
they have the fucking like unit like fin thing at the bottom or whatever.
Yeah, we're gonna get into the physical description of them, but first let's go over some real life mythology because that's always fun for me.
Yeah.
I like history, I like mythology.
Let's get into it.
So in folklore, mermaids are aquatic creatures with the head and upper body of a female humanoid and the tail of a fish. Unlike a lot of other mythological creatures we've discussed on the show, mermaids aren't exclusive to any one specific culture or region or origin. They actually appear in the folklore of many cultures worldwide, including the Middle East, Europe, Asia, and Africa. And as wide and varied as their origins would entail, their place in the historical zeitgeist is just as varied. Mermaids have been associated with perilous events such as floods, storms, shipwrecks, and drownings in some cultures, while in other folk traditions they can be benevolent or beneficent, bestowing boons and falling in love with humans.
That's weird. So they're either really good or really bad.
It just depends on who's telling the story and what part of the world.
Makes sense.
So in the oldest known mermaid story that we have, this dates back to ancient Assyria, circa 1000 BC. In this story, the Assyrian goddess Atargatis, mother of the Assyrian queen Semiramis, fell in love with a mortal, a simple shepherd, and unintentionally killed him with her god powers.
Aw, damn. Oh, no. What was that? It's time to do the sex.
Oh, no.
Crushed him. No.
Ashamed, she jumped into a lake and took the form of a fish. But the waters were unable to conceal her divine beauty. Thus, she took the form of a mermaid. Beautiful human above, the waist, fish below.
Damn.
So
I want to be a fish. Nope.
Nope.
Can't be a fish.
Can't be a fish. You're too beautiful to be a fish.
I'm so powerful, but I'm more beautiful than I am powerful.
Right, exactly. So the best known example of mermaids in literature is probably Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale, The Little Mermaid.
Sure.
So published in 1837. The title character, youngest of the merman king's daughters, must wait their turn to reach the age when she will be allowed to emerge from the sea and sit on a rock there to observe the upper world. When she does this, the mermaid falls in love with a human prince and also longs for an eternal soul like those of humans, despite humans having much shorter lifespans.
Sure.
Her two cravings are intertwined, and only by achieving true love can her soul bind with the humans and become everlasting.
Okay.
But of course, she has one major issue. She's half fish.
Right. It's a big one.
It's a big one. Her fishtail poses her an insurmountable obstacle for enticing humans, except for ones with a very particular fetish. But I guess that would make this story get really weird really fast. So instead, she seeks out the aid of a sea witch who offers a potion of transformation to turn her into a human form.
Yeah.
But this transformation comes at a price.
Right.
Both her tongue and beautiful voice. And also, if she fails to make the prince fall in love with her, she will dissolve into sea foam in the dawn after he marries someone else.
Ain't nothing worse than sea foam.
Mm-mm. Not a great deal, if you ask me.
Subpar, at best.
But she disagrees and decides to endure the excruciating pain of growing two very new human legs, heads to the surface, and despite her inability to speak, almost succeeds in wedding the prince, but then he falls for someone else.
Also, this version says that she gave up her tongue specifically.
Yeah, it's true.
So, like, the Disney version probably doesn't have nobody clawing no tongues out of no mouths.
No, what I mean? It's true.
But maybe that did happen.
Also
painful.
Also, in this version, it said that she walks upon the land, it feels like she's walking upon knives at any given moment.
Oh, no. Yes. What? Yes. She just got to deal with that?
That's just through your life now.
Oh, shit. I'm not used to, like, the way the ground feels, and mm-hmm. it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
Dope.
So, he falls in love with someone else, though.
Bummer.
Big problem. The mermaid is presented with a way out of her doom, though. Stab the prince with a magic knife before his marriage and pretend none of this ever happened. But at the moment of truth, she decides she does not have it within her to kill the prince, and instead hurls herself in the sea at the crack of dawn, the day after the prince's wedding, and dissolves into foam. But instead of ceasing to exist, she feels the warm sun and discovers that she is turned into a luminous and ethereal earthbound spirit, a daughter of the air. As the Little Mermaid ascends into the atmosphere, she's greeted by the other daughters who tell her she's become like them because she strove with all her heart to obtain an immortal soul. Because of her selflessness, she's given the chance to earn her own soul by doing good deeds for mankind for 300 years and will one day rise up to heaven.
Hey, you did a bad trade, but we'll let you go for good deeds because
right,
we know
exactly.
You'll do them.
Right, exactly.
What they don't tell you about good deed doing is that there's low on manpower up in the good deed department. They
yeah.
really need good
they
deeds
really
to
need
go out there and
deeds.
Do their
it's
stuff.
True.
So they're getting
it's
the Little
true.
Mermaid up there.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So that's the real story of the Little Mermaid, or
wow.
the original one. I shouldn't say real one. The Disney one's fine, too. I like that movie.
I like the sea hag version where she comes up and does the trickery to make him fall in love. Like, that part
yeah.
would still be cool
oh, yeah,
if that's
no.
what was going on.
Disney movies are good because they're good. Moving on.
Sure.
So, D&D merfolk have undergone a couple changes over the editions. They originally had the very classic mythological look of the upper body, arms, and head of a human from the waist up, and instead of legs, they had a fishtail from the hips down.
Yeah.
The human portion of them was described as being very physically attractive and having a rather unearthly beauty to them.
Okay, kind of elfy description.
Much the
there.
Same as that of elves.
Okay.
Yeah. This version of their depiction is pretty cohesive across editions from 1st to 4th edition. 5th edition has taken a different approach, with the human portion of their bodies being much more aquatic in nature,
oh.
with skin of blue or green,
oh.
Fingered hands with prominent webbing, hair-like fins that adorn their heads. In both versions, merfolk tend to dress in simple clothing made of seashells and simple bits of cloth.
That's like the water genasi has that kind of flavor to it, too.
A little bit. But this is
stuff.
Even more so.
Even
this
more
is,
so.
Yeah, even
Maybe
more
you got
so.
Those little long, like, tendril, like, kind of things off the fins that
yeah,
flow
sure.
behind you.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the merfolk person, like, all your human side leg beauty just gets transferred to the upper body.
Sure, absolutely. but no, I kind of like 5th edition's take. It looks more like... If mermaids were, like, real, like, if they were an actual creature,
yeah.
they would look something like this.
That's a hard sentence to take in, but I get what you mean.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
So merfolk tribes and villages span the world, and their people are as varied in color, culture, and outlook as the human races of the surface. They build their settlements in vast undersea caverns, mazes of coral, and the ruins of sunken cities, or structures that they carve from the rocky seabed.
Okay.
They tend to dwell in water shallow enough that the passage of time can be marked by the gleam and fade of sunlight through the water. So they don't
That's
go
cool.
very deep. They're,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think dolphins are very similar. They don't really actually swim all that deep. They like the sun is always in sight or so.
Come at me, people in the comments about your animal love. You're always there, and I love you guys so much because I learn a lot about animals.
It's true. In the reefs and trenches near their settlements, merfolk harvest coral and farm the seabed, shepherding schools of fish as land-based farmers tend sheep.
Okay.
Only rarely do merfolk venture into the darkest depths of the ocean. In such depths and in their undersea caverns, merfolk rely on the light of bioluminescent flora and fauna, such as jellyfish, whose slow, pulsing movements lend merfolk settlements an otherworldly aesthetic. So,
yeah,
no dark vision. They
I
don't have that.
No dark vision. They have bad vision.
They have bad vision.
I just want to be clear, like, dark vision is not... standard, actually. It's just a joke just I make on the
so,
show.
It's just so rampant that
so
it seems
prevalent
standard.
In yeah. this game that it's like, well, might as well. It is the standard because there's so kinda. Many creatures that have it.
It's yeah, I feel you. Exactly. Yeah. So it isn't really explained why this doesn't apply to the other aquatic humanoids, but merfolk are said to lack the materials and practical means to forge weapons beneath the waves, write books and keep lore, or to shape stone to raise buildings and cities. But we've talked about all the other fish folk, and they have dope-ass cities and dope-ass weapons. Anyways, as a result, most live in small hunter-gatherer tribes, each of which holds unique values and creeds. Only occasionally do merfolk unite under the rule of a single leader. They do so to face a common threat or to complete a conquest. Such unifications, though, can be the beginning of undersea kingdoms with dynasties lasting hundreds of years.
Okay.
Merfolk defend their communities with spears crafted from whatever materials they can salvage from shipwrecks, beaches, and dead undersea creatures. Okay. They also train aquatic animals to serve as their guardians, similar to the way humans train dogs and horses. Merfolk's only natural enemy is the Sahuagin.
The Sahuagin. That's a good-ass natural enemy to have.
It is.
Because they sound like everybody's enemy.
They're everybody's enemy.
Yeah.
Except for sharks. Sharks and Sahuagin get along, and everyone hates them.
Cool.
So... Merfolk worship a deity named Iadro. Iadro is an aloof intermediate water deity of good who's responsible for creating both merfolk and another humanoid fish people called the Lokatha. Yes, there are even more fish people.
There are more fish. There's so much underwater campaign is cool. Just figure out how weapons work underwater. Apparently, there's ranger weapons that work underwater.
Sure.
Tridents for sure work underwater because if they don't, I'd be mad about it.
Yeah, that would be dumb.
All the art.
Yeah, spears, tridents are going to be your best bet. I can see bladed weapons that you swing, but swinging is difficult underwater.
I would like homebrew weapons that shoot bursts of water, high pressure or air or something like that. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm. So Iadro watches over both races from his magic mirror on the elemental plane of water to ensure that they do not vie for territory. Mm-hmm. He also has an alliance with the other good deities of the sea known as the Asathol Fenere. This alliances to ensure peace between the various good peoples of the ocean so that they may thrive and not be overtaken by the many evils of the deep.
Yes.
As we've talked about, there's a lot of evil down there.
There's a lot of evil. It's kind of just like the land, though, like how they're just like beholders and dragons and stuff.
Exactly.
There's, like bullshit down here, too. It's just so vast. There's so much and so much area like that you can just have pockets of good, pockets of bad.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Merfolk worship their father deity with passion, making their supplications open to non-merfolk so that they might hear songs devoted to him. The songs and swimming dances they use in prayer change with every season, as well as during their numerous holidays.
Okay.
And that's all I really have on merfolk. There's not a lot on them. We're going to talk about Moreau, who are directly intertwined with merfolk after the short rest. But before we go to our short rest, let's go over the stat block for merfolk.
I got this.
All right.
Do you think these guys, before we do this, what do you think these guys do for fun? Like, I know they're doing things for like their own safety.
Races. I'm sure there's games that you can play with dice or something.
Okay.
Do
you think some hooligans are like punching holes in the bottom of boats and stuff?
Or
like,
yeah, sure. You're going to have your bad merfolk.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
You're going to have your teenagers going to shore and playing pranks on people.
They're smoking seaweed.
Yeah.
Merfolk, medium humanoid merfolk, neutral. Mm-hmm. They're neutral. They're just neutral.
They're very neutral. They're just people.
Armor class, 11. Mm-hmm. Hit points, 11.
Mm.
Speed, 10 feet. So they have regular speed of walking.
Yeah, they
could
flop
speed.
Around. They could crawl.
Oh, like flop on the deck like a fish or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Swim, 40 feet. Cool. That's 40. If you can swim or fly, it's 40. Otherwise, it's more like 30, huh?
Yeah, that does tend to be normal. Okay. Now, 40 feet in 6 seconds is pretty good, I think.
That's fast.
Yeah, it seems pretty quick. Yeah,
Especially if you're doing other stuff, like taking an attack action.
Yeah.
Now we got strength at 10, dex at 13, con at 12, intelligence 11, wisdom 11, charisma 12. So this is just like slightly better than your average town person, I guess?
Yeah, they're just people, man, and they live under the ocean, and... It's tough down there.
Yeah, they have like armor and hit points more than a townsperson because you've got to be tougher to live under the water.
Sure,
there's a lot of pressure living under water.
Literal and figurative. Yeah.
Okay, so I got...
anything else on them? I know it's a pretty simple slap block.
Plus 2 perception, passive perception is 12. They speak Aquan in common.
Mm-hmm.
Their challenge rating 1/8. And they have the amphibious ability, which is merfolk can breathe air and water.
Mm.
They have the spear action. So melee or ranged weapon attack, +2 to hit. 5 feet or the reach is 5 feet or range of 20 to 60 feet. One target, the hit is 3 or 1d6 piercing damage, or 4 or 1d8 piercing damage if used with two hands to make a melee.
They're pretty weak. I think they're, what, one half challenge rating?
An eighth.
An eighth? Ooh, really weak.
Pretty bad.
It doesn't, it only gets one lower than that, and that's 0.
Yeah, but at least they have, like, they're a group. This is a cool mob for, like, a entry level water campaign,
yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this
absolutely.
Is like some common shit. Yeah, that's all I got.
With that being said, let's take a short rest.
Let's do it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Hey everybody, be sure to check out
Super Quest Saga, a future fantasy 5th edition D&D actual play podcast homebrewed and dungeon mastered by yours truly, me, and set in space.
And I play in it, along with your special guest Jake and friend of the show, Josh Freeland.
You can find it on YouTube, iTunes, or anywhere else you can get your podcasts.
Super Quest Saga!
Returned.
Indeed we have. Still under the ocean, though.
How cool is speak with animals underwater? That's got to be fucking sick, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can do the whole Little Mermaid scene down there.
You really can.
Under the sea that shit right now.
It's very true. But now we're going to take a bit of a darker turn in this underwater kingdom.
Oh, no. We're
going
to go deeper down.
Kind of.
Less light, more pressure.
We're going to talk about the Murrow.
Okay.
So Murrow are actually a new monster to D&D introduced in the 5th edition Monster Manual for the first time. Kind of. There is a version of the Murrow, which is actually just a sea ogre. We're actually going to be saving these guys for a Year of the Giant episode. We're not going to talk about the sea ogre at all.
Oh, damn. Okay.
There are sea ogres.
Get ready for the future, everybody.
Indeed.
There are sea ogres.
Indeed. The new 5e Murrow appears in a couple of adventure modules, but essentially all information for them comes out of page 219 of the 5e Monster Manual.
Damn, that's it?
That's it. That's all there is.
Shit.
They are essentially a corrupted and chaotic evil version of merfolk related to demonkind. Murrow haunt coastal waters, preying on fishermen, merfolk, and any other edible creatures that cross their path. These savage monsters snatch and devour unwary prey, hauling drowned corpses back to their underwater grottos to feed.
Are these the demons to the lawful evil Sahuagin?
Mm, I could see them kind of being like that. Yeah, I know what you mean, because the Swaggin are more devilish. That Moreau have a much, much smaller influence on the sea. There's not nearly as many of them as there are of, say, the Swaggin.
Sure. Do you think that demons are just trying to get their foot in the door, like how devils have, in a way?
A little bit, kind of. Okay. Even in the other way, devils aren't exactly trying to get a foot either.
No, yeah, I know what you mean. Just like the energies of those, like,
yeah,
the lawful
Moreau
evil,
are chaotic
evil,
and they are demonic in nature.
Okay, so I got one more what if for you.
Okay.
What if it's Meroe?
I don't think it's Meroe.
Okay, cool.
but maybe it is. Meroe are depicted as hulking, enormous merfolk with monstrous and demonic features. They're large rather than medium-sized creatures. Their physiques are bulky and muscular. Their hands are ended in sharp claws rather than webbed fingers. Their heads are more shark and even reptilian-like with razor-sharp teeth.
Wow.
They're not very humanoidish at all, really.
Makes sense for an underwater monster to have, like... like the grappling kind of thing that you see going on in the ocean, mm-hmm. like the hooks and the tentacles and like the very sharp teeth that won't let go.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, these guys are fucking cool. Okay.
So it is said their origin is demonic in nature. Mm-hmm. Long ago, a tribe of merfolk found an idol of Demogorgon at the bottom of the sea.
Shout out to Demogorgon. Right. There's a lot of shout outs going on from my boy Demogorgon.
It's happening. It's happening again. What does it mean?
You know we're getting close to episode 200, Will.
Oh my God. Yeah, I know.
Oh shit. Did I say something?
You did say something.
I said something.
So not knowing what the idol was, they brought the artifact to their king. Everyone who touched the idol became afflicted with madness, including the king himself, who ended up decreeing that a sacrificial ritual must be performed in order to open a gateway to the abyss.
Ooh.
The ocean turned red with the blood of slaughtered merfolk, but the ritual worked. And the king led the survivors through the underwater gate to Demogorgon's lair of the abyss.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
The merfolk remained there for generations, fighting for their lives as the abyss warped them completely, transforming them into hulking evil monstrosities. Thus, the first Moreau were born.
Whoa, okay.
So whenever an opportunity presents itself, the Prince of Demons sends Moreau back to the material plane to wreak havoc in the oceans.
Shout out to the Prince of Demons.
The Moreau are bullies, attacking all creatures smaller and weaker than themselves. Moreau dwell in undersea caves filled with treasures and trophies taken from their victims and sunken ships. They tie the rotting corpses of dead enemies and drowned sailors to strands of kelp to mark the borders of their territory.
Hell yeah, dude.
And that is everything there is written about the 5e Moreau.
What more do you need, baby? reference the Demogorgon page.
Right, indeed.
That's all you need after that.
Sure.
This is a segue into my man.
Well, I believe one thing we do need is for you to read the stat block.
And I will.
Okay, sounds good.
In the honor of the prince himself. Uh-huh. The Moreau, large monstrosity, chaotic evil, armor class 13, which is a natty armor. Mm-hmm. Hit points 45. It's a respectable mm-hmm. amount of hit points. Speed is 10 feet. And swim is 40 feet. This should be specified. This is a flopping speed of 10
feet. Right.
Strength, 18. Dex, 10. Con, 15. Intelligence, 8. Wisdom, 10. Charisma, 9. Yikes.
Yeah. Not a lot of personality.
A little more charisma.
Not really. I mean, they're just mean and nasty.
Meat monsters. They're strong as shit, though.
Yeah.
Senses, dark vision, 60 feet. Passive perception, 10. Languages, abyssal. And Aquan. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Cool flavor. Fuck. What does that sound like underwater?
I can only imagine.
Evil bubbles. Okay, so amphibious. The Moreau can breathe air and water. Multi-attack. Moreau makes two attacks, one with its bite and one with its claws or harpoon. Melee weapon attack for the bite. Plus 6 to hit, 5-foot reach, 1 target, and that's 8 damage or 1d8 plus 4 piercing damage. Claws, melee attack weapon, plus 6 to hit, 5-foot reach, 1 target, 9 damage, 2d4, plus 4 slashing damage. Harpoon, melee or ranged weapon attack. Is this like a mechanical thing? Okay, plus 6 to hit, reach, or 5 feet. Plus 6 to hit, reach 5 feet, or range of 20 to 60 feet.
Yeah, they can throw it or stab
plus
with
like
it.
A spear. Okay, yeah. So 1 target. So hit is 11, which is 2d6 plus 4, piercing damage. If the target is a huge or smaller creature, it must succeed on a strength contest against the Moreau or be pulled up to 20 feet toward the Moreau. That's fucking cool.
Indeed.
Get over here.
Yeah, that's exactly what that's like. Did you get the challenge rating on that bad boy?
I don't think. Two.
It's two? So it's 8 times stronger than your average merfolk.
It is 8. Well, if it's an 8th, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fuck. So... this harpoon, is it just like a spear on a rope?
I guess that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, okay, because I'm like, yeah. My modern brain says that I need a big machine to fire a harpoon, but I don't.
No, you have a Murrow. Like, they're large and buff. They can throw that, no problem.
That's fucking scary.
And then pull that rope back, no problem.
Can you imagine being a regular adventurer trying to swim down here?
Well, I mean, I imagine they use this to get people who are not in the water,
Oh,
so, like, you're leaning over your boat, and suddenly a harpoon hits you, grabs you by the shoulder, and pulls you underwater, and now they got you. They're going fishing in reverse.
And then your homie's like, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and it's Jaws. Sure. So, I wonder if they're doing that thing. You know how when you aim a spear at a fish, like, above water, there's that, like, illusory effect where they're, like, lower than that or whatever? They got to do it in reverse. Like, aim high, my son. For the glory of Demogorgon.
Indeed. Yes, exactly. Which I love that imagery.
Okay, cool.
Any questions about Murrow?
When you describe this, I need a picture of these Murrow.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to look it up real quick.
So I want to see if they look the way you pictured them.
Murrow. See, that's the problem. Is like, I'm having trouble sort of picturing them a little bit.
They look pretty cool.
Oh, these do look cool. They're like, oh, they're nasty. Mm-hmm. These guys are nasty. Okay. This is much more cohesive than I was expecting. I was expecting more of like a deformed body.
No,
for some reason.
Yeah, no, they look like almost like a natural creature in a way.
Yeah, they're very humanoidish and very like they have a fluent design according to what I'm looking at. You can look at it too.
Yep, that's the one.
But yeah, this is cool. That harpoon, it is just a fucking crazy ass spear on a rope on a table. It's like so. Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
There it is.
These guys are pretty cool. I'm sad that there's not more like.
Yeah.
In-depth lore on them.
Oh, my God. Yes.
A lot of puns this episode.
There really is. And I think we could get ready for a long rest.
Yeah, let's do that. Get me out of here.
All right. Long rest time.
All right. Stretching out. You know, it's getting warmer out. And
indeed it is.
Got some shorts on, but you know I never go barefoot when I'm getting ready for bedtime. And I've got... Oh, damn it. They're all wet again. My slippies. Who keeps doing this?
I'm sorry. I keep bringing us to the beach.
There's
I don't know why I keep doing this.
A harpoon hole in my slippies.
Oh, no.
Somebody dunked my socks. Okay. Let's get ready for bed like we normally do with coffee.
Yeah, because that's exactly how you go to sleep.
Actually, when you're staying up late trying to plan your campaign,
there's
a certain brew that's good for you. And it's the Adventurers Coffee Company, bro.
Yeah, I know. They make really good coffee.
They sent us a complimentary bag. It was so good.
I kind of want another one.
Okay. Well, we can get, you know where you can get it? At adventurerscoffee.co/store. There's a link in the description below. I don't have a lot of practice reading links, but
we're working on it.
Their logo is fucking cool. It's like an adventurer's pack. You'll know it when you see it. They've got great flavors like Fair Maiden, the Base Camp, the Dungeons and Dark Roast. Love that name. And the Bean to the Future, which I imagine is going to fucking jize you up so hard you think you're in
the
future.
I'm actually a little nervous to try that one.
Well, you can go there and use promo code DUNGEONCAST to score yourself a sweet bag of their brew.
Nice.
It smells like, whoa.
I know, it's very potent.
I opened the package up when they sent it to me, and I was like, whoa, I'm just not used to smelling coffee.
Oh, okay.
But my wife was like, hey, what did you just open over there?
She smelled it from across the house.
She came out of the room like, oh, dang, did you just open some delicious coffee?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, we had some. It was great. So if you guys want, you can go there to Adventurers Coffee Company, get yourself a bag, use promo code DUNGEONCAST to get yourself 10% off.
Nice.
Yeah, so thank you guys at the Adventurers Coffee Company team. We really appreciate you reaching out and sending us your flavor, which we dig. We think you'll dig it too. Mm-hmm. So if you need caffeine in your life, go get some at Adventurers Coffee Company. Congratulations to whoever won our contest.
All three of you guys. We don't know who you are because it's May 17th right now when we record this.
Yeah, we're doing it big ahead of time these days. So, you know... be sure to go check that out on our social media. You can be informed of what's coming up with the show, news on Super Quest Saga, etc. That should actually be back in the runnings at this point. There should be either a Saga episode coming out very soon,
I think it's a week out or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's coming back. We see you guys asking about it. We know it's dope. We know it's dope.
Thank you.
But thanks for asking about it. We took the hiatus because of the pandemic.
Right.
Well, initially we took a hiatus because we're halfway through.
Right.
But get ready for some fucking awesome stuff.
Indeed. And as for the contest winners, we will announce them here on the show as soon as than we know and are recording.
The next episode after this one.
Maybe. I'm actually not sure about that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, it might be a while before we announce you on the show, but we will, and you will have seen it on social media. Yeah. We will announce you there in real time.
And you'll have your prizes as well.
This is probably all long dead and gone by the time. Okay, so yeah, check us out on social media for contest stuff. You can find Will at The Dungeon Cast on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram, The Dungeon Cast. Or if you just want to email us, you can email us at thedungeoncast@gmail.com. We're taking ad inquiry. We love your cool stories that you sent. We try to respond to all those. If we haven't yet, we'll get there eventually, hopefully. Sorry if we missed you. But we're getting a lot of emails these days. We're doing our best. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we call it a game?
I think we've covered it all.
Did we cover it all? Why am I feeling like I'm forgetting something?
I have no idea.
Maybe it's just my love. Thank you, guys. I love you guys.
Yes.
But yeah, we'll catch you next time. We're going to get out of the ocean and go to bed.
With that, we'll call it a game.
Bye. Talk to you guys later.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.